The day at first I discovered Christmas was, as I say, the day that I looked into that crib and I realized for the first time in my heart and life that this was not a legend or a myth, that I was looking at the recreation of a historical fact, if you like. It's from Luke that we primarily get so much of our Christmas story, and we've heard two passages from Luke's Gospel today. And Luke's writings are rich in historical detail. Unlike a lot of biblical writers, Luke gives us a huge amount of detail surrounding the situation at the time of the birth of Jesus. He tells us about the census that was brought by the Romans to the people in the area under the governorship of Quirinius. He tells us about the situation. I wonder why he does that. Because surely those people who first read it and subsequent historians are anxious to listen to the detail. In the case of many of our subsequent historians and critics, it's been people who've been anxious to pick up detail that they can use to demote the story of Christmas into legend and myth by demonstrating in some way that it's inaccurate and that the historical detail that Luke provides is unreal. And yet, in reality, over many, many decades, hundreds of years really, Luke's words of description about the events of Christmas have stood the test of time. Critic after critic has analysed them in an attempt to disprove Luke's words. And time again, they have found that he is 100% accurate. Perhaps the most famous of those was a scientist or a historian and archaeologist named William Ramsay. It was his sole intent at one point to set out to prove that Luke's words were not history at all, but of his own making or invention. He set out to just examine the words of Luke in the Gospels, in the Gospel of St. Luke, and in the Acts of the Apostles, the other book that Luke wrote in the Bible, and to actually highlight those areas of historical inaccuracy. In the end, William Ramsay came up short, and he was forced to admit, and these are his own words, "Luke is a historian of the first rank. Not merely are his statements of fact trustworthy, this author should be placed along with the greatest of historians. His work went on to demonstrate, whereas previously archaeologists had refused to accept the existence of characters in the Bible like Pontius Pilate and the Hittites and tribes of the Old Testament, the existence of a town in Asia Minor called Iconium. He was able to demonstrate that in spite of all other historians and archaeologists' attempt to disprove them, these were fact, and Luke's words stood the test of time. And subsequently, many other archaeologists of history have been forced to that same conclusion, that when you read the Bible, you are reading historical fact. An eminent Jewish archaeologist, Nelson Glueck, was forced to say these words: "No archaeological discovery has ever controverted a biblical reference. No archaeological discovery has ever been able to prove the word of the Bible and God's word within the Bible to be anything but fact." And even in the Time magazine, not somewhere you'd necessarily go for your bit of Christian teaching, did an article in 1974 entitled "How True Was the Bible?" This was their conclusion. After more than two centuries of facing the heaviest scientific guns that could be brought to bear, the Bible has survived and is perhaps the better for the siege. Even on the critics' own terms, historical fact, the scriptures seem more acceptable now than they did when the rationalists began their attack. I suppose what I'm saying to you is that when you read these words and you hear the words that you've heard today, when you sing those songs, the carols that we've been singing, you are not just singing about myth and legend. You are singing about a real event, an event that beyond all others has had an impact on lives, through the centuries, lives of individuals in their thousands and their millions and their millions. So many have come to realize just what these words mean. Here's a face that you might recognize, David Suchet. Well, let's call him Poirot, because that's all we always think of him, don't we? From somewhere I got this desire to read the Bible again. That's the most important part of my conversion. I started with the Acts of the Apostles. That was the sum of Luke's. That's Luke's other book other than Luke's Gospel. And then moved to Paul's letters of Romans and Corinthians. And it was only after that that I came to the Gospels. In the New Testament, I suddenly discovered the way that life should be followed. One man's feelings when he made that discovery, if you like, of the reality of the story we tell tonight. There's a commentator, columnist and journalist. His name is Bernard Levin. I don't know if you can remember him. Probably one of those arch cynics of television. He, however, was brought to this statement. Is not the nature of Christ in the words of the New Testament enough to pierce the soul? He still looms over the world. He still looms over the world, his message still clear, his pity still infinite, his consolation still effective, his words still full of glory, wisdom, and love. That's the nature of the Christ child, the baby born in a manger on Christmas Day. And that's what we're here to celebrate. And Bernard Levin expresses that nature and that character far better than I ever can. But that's the nature of discovery. That's what's available to each of us tonight. Will you discover the reality of Christmas this year? Will you have a cider with Rosie moment singing carols? Will you look at a crib scene, as I did, and have that Christmas moment when you discover the reality of Christmas and along with it, the reality of Jesus Christ, and learn the truth behind Bernard Levin's words of the nature of the Christ child. Merry Christmas.